Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
America Meditating Blog Talk Radio Show. We collect wisdom, hear stories, and inspire each other. I'm Sister Jenna. Tune in live from Monday through Friday at 8 a.m.
Last lecture, remind each of us to live our dreams.
Be creative every day.
Take a fun trip. Motivation. Pass it on from the Foundation for a Better Life at values.com.
Take a break. Breathe. Why don't you visit the Peace Village Learning and Retreat Center, 518-589-5000. Hello and welcome to America Meditating Radio Show. You are listening to Sister Jenna, and we're broadcasting from the Meditation Museum in downtown Silver Spring. And if you haven't been out here yet, what are you waiting for? It is a haven. It is a space of silence and peace and power and comfort. And when you leave these doors, you are not the same as when you entered. If you happen to miss some of our archived shows, download the free Pulse for Peace app that our 13-year-old did one summer when we just couldn't get him to relax, so he was able to put that all together. Or just go to the Meditation Museum website and have an opportunity to look at all the wonderful things that are going on. We're looking forward to welcome Valerie Alexander, who's the author of the acclaimed self-help book, Happiness as a Second Language. We're going to be turning to her shortly, but for now, let's enjoy Being Lifted by Lucinda Drayton on her Bliss CD. Take a breath and just celebrate.
The perfect life.
I've been unwound and unraveled, but am I happy? Today's discussion is about this topic of happiness, and its pursuit is enshrined as a fundamental right in the United States, and it occupies most of our lives. But what do we really know about this thing called happiness? Can we study it? Are we born with happiness? Do we make ourselves happier? Who's happy? Who's not? And why? Researchers are learning more and more about the answers to some of these questions, because many times I've shared with folks about the path to peace, and after a while they get bored, but they would definitely rather the path to happiness. And the definition of happiness is what? A sense of joy, inner contentment. Defining happiness can seem as elusive as achieving it. But people want to be happy. This song about Happy by Farrell Smith, is top the charts. Oh, I love it. I mean, I get up at 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning, and I'm playing the happy song. And I'm dancing in the morning to my happiness rhythm. Because I know, personally, I feel happiness is within me. But algae, anger, lust, greed, attachment, and ego, it reduces the awareness that I'm born with fundamental rights of the human spirit. And psychologists say that, you know, we can be happier, and they also feel that they can study the pathway to happiness or measure it. And there might be some good reason for doing so. Positive psychology is the scientific study of the strengths and virtues that enable individuals and communities to thrive. And researchers' work includes studying strengths and positive emotions. They're looking at how we're thinking and behaving. And especially in moments of challenge, are you able to maintain your happiness, or do those moments strip you from the power of your happiness? We have the fortune of having Valerie Alexander, who's the author of acclaimed self-help book, Happiness as a Second Language, and the founder and writer of the popular blog Speak Happiness. A working screenwriter since 2001, Valerie has written for Joel Schumacher, Catherine Zeta-Jones, Ice Cube, and others, and she's directed the award-winning short film Making the Cut, and is the creator, producer, and director of The Wedding Matters, Say I Do, and Life Support, three successful commercial campaigns in support of marriage equality. How lovely is that? Prior to becoming a writer, director, and author, Valerie was a corporate securities lawyer, an investment banker, and an internet executive in the Silicon Valley. She recently returned to UC Berkeley Law to teach representation of law in film. And she continues to lecture around the country with her entertaining talks, How Women Can Succeed in Hollywood Despite Having Female Brains. On the AM radio show, we are happy to welcome Valerie. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Sister Jenna. It is an absolute honor to be here.
It's always great to have somebody who believes in happiness, especially in Washington, D.C., Val.
It's kind of funny how we get so lost from that concept. You mentioned Washington, D.C. I worked in the Silicon Valley, and I now work in the entertainment industry in Los Angeles. And boy, these are industries where they have very different sets of values than happiness.
Yes, I know. I have observed that. I'm in an upcoming television travel show, and it's been interesting. And the filmmakers are so genuine and pure-hearted, and it's been interesting to observe how their purity will be the key component in protecting them from being abused of the industry. It's incredible.
I think that's what the thing that I find working in Hollywood is, that the people who don't measure their success by the traditional metrics of power and money actually turn out to be really good people. I've worked with a lot of incredibly good and good-hearted people, and they see success as creating art, or having the freedom to do what they want to do with their lives, or having the time to spend with their children. That's how they define success, and I see the other people who define success as the size of their office. And it's really easy to tell who's happy and who's not.
but been there, done that, you know, and it's always been my pure wish that one day they'll also wake up. I think it's going to be a profound moment for them. Now, talking about life, Valerie, and we've all gone through our roller coasters of emotions, relationships, mental peace, finances, and there is something that happens to some of us along the way. So from your particular point of challenge, so to speak, I'm told that now you wake up high in the morning every day. What was your turning point? And how do you keep that inner strength going?
I love the phrase wake up high, and I want everyone to understand there's nothing chemical involved in that. For me, I got a big jolt to my system, and it was a really lucky jolt. I say this in the book. There's the verb tenses of happiness, past, present, and future, and there's a fourth one that is not in any other language except happiness, which is the future uncertain tense. And the reason I call it that is that I've had this experience in my life, and I think most people have, and if they haven't yet, they will, which is sometimes the absolute worst thing that's happening to you is going to turn out to be the best thing that ever happened. And that's what happened to me. I had the incredible Silicon Valley career. I was I did these various things. I was an executive at a startup company, and the company wasn't doing well. Most people like to think there's a startup company. You start the company, you get your financing, you go public, you're millionaires. Well, that's one out of every 100. The other 99 struggle along and then go away quietly, which is what was happening with the company I was working for. And I was living with my boyfriend, and I had a sort of a big, terrible day where I was working for the company was in Hawaii, but I lived in the Silicon Valley, so I was in Hawaii for meetings. It became clear the company was not going to survive, and I tried to extricate myself at that point, which caused a giant conflict between the CEO and me.
Mm-hmm.
When I was flying back to San Francisco, I got a call from my sister that my mother had a brain tumor. They had just discovered a brain tumor the size of a navel orange.
Wow.
And she was being rushed into surgery, and when I got back to my home that I shared with my, I owned, but that my boyfriend had moved into, I discovered in a very roundabout way he was not being faithful. We'll just leave it that way.
Mm-hmm.
All on the same day.
Oh.
And I look at that as that was, I had always said that was the worst day of my life. February 11th, 2000, it was the worst day of my life. And in hindsight, that was the best day of my life because
wow.
That changed everything. That got me to leave a job that I wasn't doing well in. It got me to end a relationship that was not going to be successful. And it got me to get, I sold my house, I sold my car, I literally gave away almost all of my furniture and everything I owned. And with two suitcases and my dog, I got on a plane and flew back to Indiana. And I spent a year taking care of my mom, who is 100% better and healthy to this
fantastic,
day, 14 years
fantastic.
Later.
Lovely.
Yes. But I would have never done those things if it weren't for all of that happening on one day.
So sometimes the polarizing issues that we encounter are actually tools to make us actually acknowledge how great we really have it.
Oh, completely.
Yeah.
And also, though, sometimes we get into a routine, I can go so far as to say a rut for some people. We're afraid of change, and it takes the universe throwing a rock through our window to say, change now. Do something different now. How many people do we know who were devastated when they lost a job, but now, 5 years later, they're finally doing what they love? Or much more common, how many women do you know who were absolutely destroyed when they got divorced and then discovered not even a year later, oh, shoot, that was the best thing that ever happened to me.
Exactly, exactly. So what would you say is the root cause of our inability to welcome change? I'm remembering once I had a conversation with a few friends, and I was going through a very interesting stage, but I said, you know, change is more like just something different. And why would I run away from that which is different? So change is not like the end of something old, but it's a welcoming of something new. And why is it that we're struggling with newness and we seem to be just quite clumped into our little old way of being?
It's fear. It's very simply fear. I think it's very hard for people not to fear the unknown. I mean, going back to our caveman days, it's the most natural thing in the world would be to fear what you didn't know, what you couldn't see. You know, a lot of mythology got built around that, about explaining the unknown. It's the phrase, you know, well, something has got to be better than the devil you know. People say that.
Mm-hmm.
I think many people would prefer the devil they know. At least they understand how to process the relationship they're in, or at least they understand how to survive the job that they hate.
Mm-hmm.
Because that it takes such a giant leap of faith to say, I will go into something unknown and I will trust that I can handle it.
Yeah. So it's not the end, rather the beginning of something different.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. And look, different is scary. Different is scary for everybody. And so I look at people, you know, there's people think someone's foolish or foolhardy. I left fairly high-end careers as a lawyer, an investment banker, and a business development executive to be a screenwriter.
Wow, that's a big shift.
There weren't people laughing at me? I think that's the biggest thing, is the other half of the fear that I won't be able to handle it is half of the fear. The
right.
other half of the fear is that people will make fun of me.
Yeah, what are people going to say?
Yes, that's exactly it. What will people say? I know people who have married the wrong person because calling off the wedding would be too embarrassing.
Yeah, that's a scary one. Wow.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a big one. I was in Sedona recently, and I saw a few couples, and you could see that they were no longer really connected. And I felt a lot of empathy because I started to expand in the thought, saying that after a while, you just are so scared to break up because now they're kids, they're this, they're that. But more than anything else is the point that you're making. What will other people say? Do you think our attitude or habit of living our life based on other people's vision on us is a means of our lack of happiness?
Oh, I think it's a big one. I think so many people would be much happier if they made their decisions strictly based on what they wanted to do rather than what someone else was expecting of them, which is a big part of it. But also, the idea of shame or of embarrassment or of ridicule is very powerful, and it really does. It stops people from breaking up with someone. It stops people from quitting a good job. It stops people from moving to a new city. It, as you mentioned in the beginning, I do a lot of work in marriage equality. It stops people from telling their families who they really love.
So how do you overcome that? How do you overcome the insecurity or the fear that you feel when you're living your life more in what other people are going to say about you than what your truth is?
First off, faith and courage. Just know that everything is going to be okay, which I know is a terrible thing to say to someone who is struggling right now with something, because for them it might not be okay. I will say this. No one in history has ever died of embarrassment. People have made the wrong choice with their lives based on embarrassment. But That's part of it. I want to encourage people, if you're struggling with something because you're afraid of how it might be perceived by your family or by your society, by your cohort, go back and say, what do I want to do? What will make me happy? And then if that causes a problem for other people, limit your exposure to those people. Find a community that will support the decision you're making. And that's easier than ever with how interconnected we are as a world today. You can't name a single thing you do that you can't find a group of people online who also do that.
So true, so true.
And maybe the best thing to do is to find that group before you announce your choice. Before you move forward, put your support group in place.
If
you've got that support group in place, then you have an outlet to run to when you are making your decision and suffering the feedback of that decision.
Mm-hmm.
But it's one of the things I tell people all the time is I say there's two things. Walk away from crazy. If a situation or a person is crazy, you are not going to fix it, walk away. But the other thing I say, and I wish companies did this better. I wish corporations and employers did this better. Eliminate the toxic people from your life.
Yeah, totally believe in that.
Oh, completely. And
surround
like I said,
yourself
I wish
with your fans, I always say.
Oh, that's exactly right. That is exactly right. Why have the detractors in your life? If you say, wow, if I choose to, you know, stop being an accountant and become an actor, which I am in Hollywood, a lot of people I know made that choice. And my mother is going to criticize that choice endlessly. I have to learn how to have a life where I can limit my exposure to that kind of criticism.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now let's talk about the book. And what you're saying is really powerful because you've authored a book on happiness and you blog about happiness and a lot of the focus is about happiness. America today is striving to become more of a happier nation, I think. That's why maybe lots of Americans will sit and watch television for hours to try to feed something inside of the human spirit. In your book, Happiness is a Second Language, you teach happiness step by step in the same manner as one would perhaps learn a new language. Could you tell our listeners a little bit more about the book and what is happiness to you?
I'll start with talking about the book and how it came about. It was my husband and I went through a very difficult time. I mean, the kind of thing that literally would destroy a lot of marriages. And almost like my February 11th day, a lot of things that happened at the exact same time, including a tremendous financial strain, a betrayal by a family member, and we lost a baby. And my husband was saying to me, I cannot believe you can stay happy. I cannot believe you can still be a happy person during this time. And jokingly, I said, I know it's strange. It's not even my native language. And when I said that, it hit me. I realized it's true. It's not my native language. I mean, I have wonderful parents. I want to say that straight up. I have wonderful parents. They've been very supportive of all the choices I've made in my life. And there have been some crazy choices. but they weren't raised where happiness was something you focused on. They were raised to focus on survival and security and the same things that most people in the world focus on, you know, feeding yourself, feeding your family. And when I started thinking about where happiness came into it, where my happiness came from, it really came from that day when I started making choices not based on what was expected of me, but what I wanted to do, what I wanted to do with my life, what relationships I wanted to have. And it started occurring to me that is a different language. That's a different set of brain activity in the same way that speaking a different language is a different set of brain activity. And so I started looking at the lessons I learned and the things I knew, and I started thinking, how do you teach someone this? And I thought, you teach it like it's a different language. So I say this, people always ask me, oh, what other happiness books did you read? I must confess, I've never read another happiness book. I read articles and stuff like that. I've never read a book on happiness. What I did is I found all the books on language I could find. And I started going through and I started studying, how do you teach people a new language, something completely different from how what they were brought up speaking. And so the book starts with very simple concepts. It's like in vocabulary, the first thing you learn, how to count, how to say the days and the weeks and the months. These are simple concepts. The book starts with very simple exercises. It starts with learning how to say, I'm a happy person.
Right.
And that's extremely powerful. It's powerful in two ways. Just saying it actually creates a neural synapse that creates a path that if you've never said, I'm a happy person, that path has never been created. So if you wake up every morning, I tell people, wake up every morning before you get out of bed, take 3 deep breaths and say, I'm a happy person. And you will start to establish that neural pathway. That's one way to say it. There's another way to say it that I use almost every day. When your happiness is being challenged and you find yourself spiraling into unhappiness or spiraling into tension or anger or whatever your response is, if you can stop and say, I'm a happy person, that will so completely disrupt that signal. It will take you to the place where you need to be to get through that situation without becoming the person you don't want to be.
That makes sense. It really is a matter of awareness and then that conscious shift that happens when you declare it for yourself, hey, I don't need an external force to make me happy. I'm born this way. Kind of reminds me of Lady Gaga's song, even though I know it has a different meaning. But I feel like owning the God-given birthright of joy and happiness is my responsibility to myself. It is not determined by someone's behavior or attitude towards me.
That is so correct. That's just a fantastic thing to remind people as well.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said the God-given right. Look at our founding fathers in this country. They said we had the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Mm-hmm.
Not the pursuit of wealth, not the pursuit of security, not all those things that certain factions in politics seem to claim that we should, the pursuit of profit. No, the people who founded this country understood that you're born with the right to pursue happiness.
Absolutely, totally agree with that. You're singing to the choir, Valerie, you're singing to the choir. We are approaching the end of our wonderful happy show, and we would definitely love to continue the conversation in the future. But I'd love for you to leave our listeners with, what is your favorite life quote? And is there anything that you're up to that you would like our listeners to know so that they can contact you?
My favorite life quote, and I'm sharing this because it's the one I struggle with every single day. And so I don't want people to think that they have to live up to some happiness ideal that is almost impossible. I still struggle with this, which is, don't compare your behind-the-scenes movie with someone else's highlight reel.
I love it.
and I, like I said, I fight with it every day. I see people who have what I don't have, and I have to remind myself they have their struggles. Theirs are different than my struggles. And what I would love, I have a short little workbook called One Day of Fluent Happiness that's free. It's on my website. So if anybody goes to speakhappiness.com, they can, they'll see the link is on the right-hand side of the page over a picture of my dog. So click on the link, get your free One Day of Fluent Happiness workbook. It's 7 very simple exercises that if people did them every single day, they would find that they just have much more happiness at the end of the day. And if they did it every day for a month, then at the end of that month, they would find that they're just happier people. And I want to share that with everyone. So if you go to speakhappiness.com, you can download the 1 day of Fluent Happiness workbook for free.
And it's a really lovely site because I loved your one that you had, your happy quote for Sunday: when nothing goes right, just go left.
I love that one. You know, that's the one. That's the key. That's the key. Boy, is that true.
Valerie.
Sister Jenna, thank you. What a joy this conversation was.
It was for me, too. It was for me, too. I'm looking forward to part two of Happiness with you.
Well, thank you.
Take good care. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
You know, I was struck by Valerie sharing that perhaps a lot of our happiness can be taken away by the fact that we invest too much in what other people are going to say about you. That perhaps if I am who I need to be, that I won't be accepted or I'll be ashamed. And I was remembering, and a story I tell my listeners all the time, when I had woke up one day and I just knew I needed to be genuine from the inside as I emanated the life of a yogi or a meditator or a spiritual representative for humanity, that I needed to be really upfront. And I reached that place in myself because I was in touch with it. I was okay if others were going to say, oh, Sister Jenna, she's off the wall, or she's not the, you know, the image of what a yogi looks like. That no, I was living my truth and my divinity, and that was my joy. And I've come to realize, no matter how much you paint your masks or put on faces for people, no one's ever going to be happy with you. What's really important is for you to find the place where you're happy with yourself. Remember, as I end the show every day, no one can take away your happiness unless you give them permission. And I know for sure we're here to love each other the same. Take care, everyone, and have a really special day. And thanks for tuning in.
That's what you want to do. Because I'm happy. Clap along if you.